It's nearly impossible to have a conversation about Illinois government or politics without it eventually coming back to one man, House Speaker and Democratic Party of Illinois Chairman Mike Madigan. Michael Madigan, as he is frequently known. And we heard that just a few minutes ago in my conversation with Senator Lightford. His first election was in 1969, when voters sent him to Springfield as a delegate for the 1970 Constitutional Convention. Richard Nixon was president. Madigan won election to the State House of Representatives in 1970, and he's been serving ever since. Through the Ford and Carter administrations and the late Jim Thompson's election as governor, it didn't take long for Madigan to begin climbing the power structure in the Illinois House, aided by his close ties to then-Chicago Mayor Richard J. Daley, as this 1975 public radio report shows.
Rumors have also been flying that Shea, a party workhorse, may be removed by the Chicago organization and placed elsewhere. That would leave the House leadership post open to possible entry by Madigan.
Madigan would indeed enter that post, succeeding Gerald Shea as Mayor Daley's man in Springfield, then becoming the Democratic majority leader, a little time as minority leader, and in 1983, Speaker of the House of Representatives. At this point, Reagan is president, then Bush, Clinton, another Bush, Obama, and Trump. In that time, Governor Thompson left office, and Governors Edgar, Ryan, Blagojevich, Quinn, and Rauner came and went. Now, of course, there's Governor J.B. Pritzker. Madigan is closing on 36 years as Speaker, and he's held that position for all but 2 years, since 1983. Before we get into this conversation, I want to say there are 40 different conversations we could have about Michael Madigan, about his wealth, how many people, how people in his political organization were bullies in some cases, and in some cases sexual harassers, about his relationships with different factions of the Democratic coalition. We'll touch on some of that, but principally, I want this conversation to be about power. How did Madigan come to power? How has he maintained power? And what's his power for? Listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation by giving us a call at 800-222-9455. The number again, 800-222-9455. If you have questions about Madigan and power, the phone lines are open, 800-222-9455. Joining me now to talk about this are three people, current or former journalists who've covered Madigan for decades. Rich Miller is the proprietor of Capital Facts, a subscription-based newsletter and blog that's widely read in Illinois government circles. Rich, glad to have you on.
Good to be here.
Ray Long is an investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune and was previously a longtime Springfield bureau chief for the paper. Ray, thank you for joining us. And you might have to unmute yourself. We're on Zoom. This is the modern era of digital communications. Also with us is Mike Lawrence, who first began covering the Illinois legislature in 1967, before Speaker Madigan, careful listeners will note. And he did so regularly from the mid-70s through the mid-80s. Then he became an aide to Republican Governor Jim Edgar. He was also later head of the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University in Carbondale. Mike, thanks for being here.
Glad to be here with you and Rich and Ray.
So let's start at the beginning. Ray, if you're with us now, how did Madigan get to Springfield? How did he begin his career in Illinois politics?
Well, his dad was a ward superintendent in the 13th Ward in the southwest side of Chicago. And he also was a young law student who went to one of the downtown clubs that Mayor Daley went to, and he introduced himself at Madigan's dad's advice, and they hit it off, and Michael Madigan landed a job in the law department there while he was going to school, and then he eventually made it to the Commerce Commission. During that time that he was in the law department, he would.
Nope. Ray, did we lose you? Okay.
Let me try this.
There you are. There you are. That sounds good. So okay. He was in the law department, you were saying.
He was in the law department. And while he was in the law department, that was an area that was close to Richard J. Daley's office on the fifth floor of City Hall. They bumped into each other. I think they began a mentor relationship where young Michael Madigan was a protege, and he also was moving up in the ward organization in a very swift period there. He won an election in among precinct captains in the ward organization, and then moved on to the Constitutional Convention, and then won a seat in the General Assembly. He then kept in contact with Mayor Richard J. Daley, eventually became the go-to guy that Daley would call, and put himself in position to become minority leader. I actually covered him back then, so I covered him twice as minority leader. You know, people talk about the time that he was minority leader when he lost in the 94 Republican.
And we're going to come back to that 94 moment. We need to take a quick break. You're listening to The 21st. More on Michael Madigan after this. Stay with us.
The 21st is made possible in part by Busey. For 150 years, Busey has helped business owners and entrepreneurs navigate financial decisions, achieve long-term goals, and realize dreams of success. Busey, fulfilling dreams since 1868.
Welcome back to The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're having a conversation looking at House Speaker Michael Madigan. There are a lot of ways, as I said earlier in the segment, there are a lot of ways we can talk about Speaker Madigan, but today we're focusing specifically on power, how he came to power, how he maintains power, what his power is for. We're speaking with Ray Long, investigative reporter at the Chicago Tribune, Mike Lawrence, who was a longtime State House reporter and then an aide to Governor Jim Edgar and head of the Simon Institute at SIU, and Rich Miller of the Capital Facts newsletter and blog. And Rich, I want to bring you into the conversation now. I mean, you've covered Madigan for a long time. You used to talk to him when he was still talking to reporters more than he does nowadays anyway. Can you talk about his work ethic? I mean, we heard, you know, Ray sort of went through the list of positions as he was ascending his way up to speaker. I think Madigan is pretty renowned for his work ethic. I was looking back on a speech he gave, a floor speech in 2008. This is April 17th, 2008. We couldn't get the audio, but Republicans at the time were complaining about a certain constitutional amendment that had to do with redistricting. They wanted to get called for a vote, and they wanted the schedule changed in order to accommodate that. And Madigan says, "We're not going to change a schedule that's been published for weeks or months just because you fell a little behind. That's too bad. Get up a little earlier in the morning. Get in the Capitol building a little earlier in the morning." Rich, I mean, is the speaker somebody who is always in the Capitol building early in the morning?
Yes. He arrives early, he leaves late. And I might add, except that he always has dinner at a certain time, and he leaves for that. But I have a story that I tell a lot. When he was trying to defeat Republican incumbent State Rep Skip Saviano, he was in his ward office meeting with his lieutenants and captains, and they were going over who was assigned to each area of Saviano's district. And he went through a building, stairwell by stairwell, wondering, asking who they had assigned to cover those stairwells and which days they were doing it. He gets down to that granular level of detail. It's really tough to beat somebody who puts in that amount of effort.
You know, another interesting, and for people who don't know, Skip Saviano was a Republican, but he was fairly moderate and pretty well liked on both sides of the aisle, as I recall. And one thing I remember about that campaign is that there was a mailer that took, you know, criticized Saviano for having voted for Madigan as speaker, right? And it was paid for by Madigan. So, I mean, I think it shows a certain ruthlessness and a willingness to make himself, you know, a target of attack within a certain limits, right? If it benefits his, you know, his political causes.
Yeah. I mean, his job is to win. That's how he looks at it. The job is to win the race. And if you have to do it that way, then you do it that way. Plain and simple.
Yeah. You know, Mike Lawrence, you were covering the speaker before he was the speaker, even. Can you talk about this idea of another thing that we often hear about Madigan is that he's not really an ideologue. It's about power. Somebody told me in preparing for this segment that he doesn't have a policy agenda. He has a power agenda. Can you talk about that aspect of his approach to legislating?
Well, he's not an ideologue. He never has been. And he's pragmatic with a capital P. And he's also all about power with a capital P. He actually has not pretended through the years to be otherwise. He views his job, as Rich indicated, as maintaining the Democrat majority in the House, now a supermajority, and maintaining himself in the Speaker's role.
And Ray, I wonder, can you talk about this this sort of evolution? You know, I think that when we look at the legislation that the Democrats have passed in recent years, right, legalizing marijuana, making abortion a fundamental right in Illinois should Roe versus Wade be overturned, legalizing same-sex marriage is another one, repealing the death penalty in Illinois. I think these are pieces of legislation that one might not accept a Catholic septuagenarian to endorse, but as we've heard over the years, the speaker has either evolved on some of these issues or maybe allowed himself to be led by his caucus more than most people understand. Can you talk about that, Ray? And I think you might need to unmute again. We are all on in the Zoom era.
I think he needs he also looks to his caucus as to what they want. And if that will help them, if the legislation will help them politically so that they can continue to hold the seat that can eventually vote for him for speaker, it's all a long calculation. But I thought one thing that was interesting in evolution was when he talked about gay marriage. He supported that, and he pointed to the Pope, who had just said something like, "Who am I to judge?" And he said, "Who am I to judge?" And if the Pope feels, "Who am I to judge about gay marriage?" So he is often able to find that pragmatic approach, like Mike was talking about, in the role of being the speaker of the House and trying to keep himself there as speaker, and often able to find the way that is best for the caucus overall. That also kind of was catching a new kind of wave that was popular and populist to grab a gay marriage at that time and move it forward. And it really quickly went across the United States after that. That was before the Supreme Court decision ruling it as okay.
But I think, Brian, you mentioned leading from behind, and I think that's accurate in a lot of ways. If you take a look at the abortion legislation that passed last year, he had some members of his caucus, mainly suburban freshmen women, who came to him and said, "We can't go home without this. We won't go home without this. You need to call this bill for a vote." And he had wanted to hold that until this year, where it could be more politically advantageous, as he often wants to do. But he relented and he moved the bill. So I think that's a perfect example of what you were talking about. He did, however, he voted no on cannabis legalization, even though he allowed it to come to the floor and pass.
Well, Rich, you have often remarked in your newsletters and on your blog that the speaker has a way of living rent-free in the heads of his opponents. Can you talk about this sort of mythic aura that's been built up around him and how that maybe contrasts with the idea of leading behind versus his opponents seeing him as somebody who is all-controlling and all-powerful? Or do those things coexist in tension somehow?
Yeah, he does both. I mean, you know, he leads from behind and he's a control freak, you know. And the way he controls them is to give them the at least the illusion that, you know, they have a significant voice. And they actually do have a significant voice, but it's only because, you know, he allows that to happen. And he's smart for allowing it to happen because he's been able to survive so long. There was a 1993 Tribune piece that predicted that his demise by no later than 1996.
Yeah, I saw that the other day myself.
Yeah. We won't mention who wrote it, but it wasn't Ray. Yeah. It wasn't Ray. That guy now has a cushy state pension.
Careful listeners will note Ray just already said the name. So, but that's all right. Ray, I mean, Ray, you were there for the wilderness years of the speaker, right? 94. Yeah. I've talked to some people who were in the House at that time. They described that as a searing experience for him in particular, for all Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
He definitely learned a lot, I think, during that period, because
maybe we should explain that's when the Democrats lost the majority. The only when we say Madigan's been speaker for X number 36 years, except two, those are the 2 years when the Democrats lost the majority in the House in Illinois, 95 and 96.
Right. And I think the people who were in the ward office and watching the numbers that night just were stunned. They were hit by a couple of things. One was the nationwide Republican tide spurred on by Newt Gingrich and his Contract for America. And also the Democrats had a weak candidate for governor, Don Clark Netsch, who was running against the reelection of Jim Edgar, who not only had a strong record, but he had a sympathy vote because he'd had like a quadruple heart bypass that summer. So they just got wiped out. They lost like 13 seats, I believe. I could be off one or two on that. And Lee Daniels emerged as speaker. And so Republicans with the Senate in Republican hands and Governor Edgar in office were able to push through a variety of things. One of the things you'll remember is that they tried to push through the idea that Republicans should be in control of the airports, but Rich Daley then reached out and made a pact with Gary across state to make it an interstate thing that, without going into details, botched the attempt there. The Republicans also pushed through things like the elimination of bullet voting, probably not to their advantage, as it turns out in the long run, but they thought that bullet voting was an advantage to the Democrats, and they eliminated that as well.
Straight
as
ticket. You mean this is straight ticket voting, right?
Where, straight ticket. Yeah.
And ultimately, you now have Democrats who were able to win in the suburbs, where if there was straight Republican voting, maybe they wouldn't have done so.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Of course, there have been geographic shifts too.
Sure.
One of the things, though, that you were talking about getting into the other side's minds was the time that probably the greatest power play I've ever seen Madigan make was when he had opposed Governor Thompson's attempt to get a 40% increase in the income tax from 87 to through the spring of 89. And suddenly in May 17th, I believe, of 89, Madigan shifted his own position and said, I will push through a surcharge, is what he called it, which was actually He started out with an 18.4% increase. Eventually, it changed to a 20% increase. But he blew that out of the chamber without any Republicans knowing it was coming. Governor Thompson did not know it was coming. The minority leader, Lee Daniels, didn't know it was coming. In fact, they, and this is what gets into their mind, they didn't know which way to vote. They voted like 30 or 40 of the members of the minority side voted present, including Lee Daniels. And one scribe wrote, they were scared voteless.
All right. We need, well, unfortunately, we are almost out of time. Mike Lawrence, I want to ask him, and you have known the speaker and back when he used to talk to reporters, had many conversations with him. But ultimately, and again, less than maybe a minute, maybe even 30 seconds left, what do you think, he's overstayed his time in state government?
Well, I think it would have been better for him and for the state if he had stepped aside when his governor, his daughter, Attorney General Lisa Madigan, was teed up to run for governor. And I think if the speaker had left at that point, his reputation would be better than it's going to turn out to be, regardless of how all this plays out. And I think his daughter would have been a competitive candidate for governor, and I would say probably have won the governorship. So
we're gonna have to leave the conversation there. There's so much more to talk about, as always, and the question remains: what will Speaker Madigan's legacy be? And a lot of that just depends on how the next few months and years go for him. Thank you so much to Mike Lawrence, Rich Miller, and Ray Long for speaking with me on that segment. Our show is produced by Anna Casey and Ryan Wild. Eunice Alpesan's our engagement producer, and our intern is Zainab Qureshi. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.